Welcome down to my 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. You are listening to Bucks in the Basement. My name's Chris, and Craig here is the biggest Pirates fan you'll ever meet. Let's talk Pirates baseball now. Welcome to Bucks in the Basement.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day.
Bucks in the Basement, belly on up to the 9-foot homemade oak bar, pour yourself a cold one. How are you, Craig? You hanging in there? Are you giving up? Are you panicking? Are you done? This is exactly what I said this team was in this stage of the build, and you were just kind of hoping to hang around, and you're waiting for somebody to be something, a spark. You're waiting for development to take you to the next level. You're waiting for pitching to arrive that's here, because you're not a finished product yet, and I'm still willing to wait all year long and see if somebody turns into a finished product, to see if the help shows up and it boosts them into the postseason. I still think it's a realistic thing. It's a long year, but I think if you thought it was going to be easy, you were fooling yourself.
I think probably I'm just a little bit more frustrated than I normally would be, just because we're playing on the West Coast. I don't like to stay up late, and I've had to stay up late, and I've watched just absolutely terrible baseball. I mean, you had a game last night where the Pirates get two hits. They're gifted a run on a wild pitch against an Oakland A's team who's actually playing kind of okay this year, but a team that, if you are a, you know, a competitor, a contender, that you should beat. Maybe that's kind of where the frustration comes from. Like I said, I think other parts of the frustration just comes from people getting into their echo chambers and going on to X and Facebook and stuff and starting the, you know, fire Andy Haynes chant, just like the fire Matt Canada from last year with the Steelers, and thinking that it's going to happen. If it does happen, okay. If it doesn't happen, I mean, at some point in time, it comes down to these players like taking control of their careers. And if a guy's system isn't working for you, then you have to buck that system. But I don't know, man, it's been a really rough couple weeks here after a really hot start. Still, even with these losses, hanging around 500, which is, you know, right where we said they would be, for this entire point in time, yes, is extremely frustrating to watch. But this is the reason why, like, during the off season, there's these conversations about like projections and what a player could be. And you want players to outperform projections, because most of the time the projections are like the middle ground. The projections are like, okay, here's the average, and he could either be worse than this, or he could be a lot better than this. And with a lot of the players, I mean, Ben Cherington went on his radio show on Sunday and pretty much said what everybody was thinking, is that, you know, Connor Joe and Alika Williams and Joey Bart in his small sample size are the only guys that are outperforming their projections. It's not saying everybody's performing poorly. Before we hopped on the show, Chris, we just had a conversation about, you know, Cabrian Hayes and Brian Reynolds and the types of players that they are. And right now, I mean, I'm not going to extrapolate it out, but if you did, you would extrapolate out players who are around, like, you know, between 3 and 4 WAR, solid players, not all-star players, good ball players, and that, you know, you don't have a guy on the team like Andrew McCutchen in the early 2000s, who basically just put the team on his back. And when everybody else was cold, he was still hot and was like putting up like, you know, 6, 7, 8 war, like MVP type seasons. I feel like everybody thinks that Ke'Bryan Hayes is going to have that breakthrough and that he's going to become that type of player, or that Brian Reynolds is going to revert back to the type of player he was in his 26-year-old season a few years ago and is going to be like a 6-war player. I'm pretty much thinking that we're seeing the types of players that they are, which are not bad players, but even them combined, I mean, they did carry us to a victory by hitting a, you know, a 2-run home run and a solo home run in extra innings, because then David Bednar comes in and gives up, you know, a 2-run blast, and we wouldn't have run one without Ke'Bryan Hayes' home run. But I don't know if they're the types of people that are going to be able to hit those hot streaks and just consistently be able to perform at a level that's just going to be like, okay, if the offense isn't performing, I'm going to single-handedly be able to, you know, make up runs that, you know, other people can't.
They're not Hall of Famers. I think what happens, and what happened with the Pirates, and I think what happens with a lot of teams that struggle for a lot of years and are not very good, have an owner that doesn't spend a lot of money, you kind of get used to the mediocrity. You start celebrating the wins individually because you're not even looking at the possibility of making it to the postseason or a championship run. You know, there are some fan bases, their season starts and they're like, okay, can we win the World Series? We're going to win this division, right? Like, they mark off dates on their calendars that they know are going to be big games late in the year because they're planning for the big moments. And the Pirates are not one of those teams, and this is not one of those fan bases that's had that in a long time. And I think when that's happening, you look at a guy like Brian Reynolds, and we talked about it on this show. You can go back and listen to it. You got a guy like Brian Reynolds, who's a good ball player, that at the peak moments of his career is close to elite, let's say. I'm not even going to say elite. Close to elite. And on a really bad team, you could start seeing him as something better than what he really is. And now that he's on the historical downturn for all players now, you're getting the 30, you probably had your best year already. He signs a contract. Everybody's excited. You got to bring him back. And what did we say? We said, this is a good contract. It's what he's worth. But his best years may already be behind him. Will he continue to be productive? Yeah, he's shown a track record where overall he's going to be an above average player. And that's what he is even right now. In the middle of this whole thing, doing worse than I think he'll finish this season, hitting .248 with a .751 on base percentage, OPS. He's still above the league average in OPS and contributing and playing the field well. And you may get a little bit more out of him, but he's not the kind of guy that puts his team on his back. Ke'Bryan Hayes get everybody really excited. Prospect, pedigree, and an initial first run in the major leagues where he was otherworldly. And then we saw what happened the next year, and what did we say on this show? Ke'Bryan Hayes is likely an above-average hitter, above-average fielder, a guy you keep on your team, and when he signed that deal, it was a steal if he became a superstar, but if he does what he's doing right now, that's what he's worth in the marketplace. But because those contracts are big contracts by Pirates standards, and because these were your only players over the last couple of years that you could even consider buying a jersey of, now you've got this expectation that they should be Hall of Famers. And they're just not that player. And what the Pirates have to do, and I don't know if they will accomplish this, but one of the big goals is somewhere within their organization, developing a player that is a Hall of Famer or at least an elite during the window when you can win. Because you don't have an owner that's going to go out and buy the elite player. Like, he's not going to go out and spend $300 million bringing Bryce Harper, right? That's what the Phillies did. Phillies were like, we're going to give Bryce Harper a ton of money. He's going to come in. He's going to be a star. He's a gamer. He's going to put a team on his back. Okay? You don't have anybody like that right now. You don't even have... Listen, O'Neal Cruz would look a lot better if he was Ellie De La Cruz right now. Right? I'm sorry. It's true. Does he have the potential to be that? Yes, he does. He's got a cannon for an arm and an awful lot of talent. But it hasn't happened yet. And what the Pirates need is for something like that to happen. Because they have not invested the money to go out and purchase a player that is like that. That is the guy who everybody follows. That is the guy who, when the team is down, comes in and hits two home runs. You're Aaron Judge of your team. Every team's got one. A Jose Altuve. They don't have one of those on this team right now. And that's the problem. They don't want to buy one, and they haven't developed one. And the guys they signed in Reynolds and Cabrian Hayes to the deals they sign are commensurate with what they're doing right now. Above average, above replacement level player, good solid ball players that are excellent pieces on a team that is completely unfinished. And I'm not going to turn around and rag on those two guys when it would have been unrealistic to believe them to be, based upon what they had done up to that point, based upon what they were at the time they signed their deals, based upon just basic looking at ball players over the years and how they ebb and they flow and where they're at certain ages. I think it's unfair to pin this on them. The biggest problem is a lack of development to date that needs to happen. Jack Sawinski is not a starting outfielder on most major league teams. You saw a little spark. You hoped it was going to get better, Craig, but it hasn't developed yet. And at some point, you hope there's a backup to his plan.
Are you a fan of the Pittsburgh Pirates and supporting small businesses? If so, Bucks in the Basement has you covered. Introducing the Bucks in the Basement Vouch Store, with products from places like Split Rock Coffee. Coffee with a purpose. Established, owned, and operated by disabled veterans sworn to protect America. Or Camp Craft Cocktails, more than cocktails. It's a mission to build longer tables where everyone is welcome. We try and vouch for these products. Bucks in the Basement, proudly brought to you by Vouch. Visit our Vouch store at bucksinthebasement.com or simply click on the link in the show notes. That's a tough one right there, just because, I mean, we did see Jack Sawinski last year. We talked about before the show was like, you know, more of like, you know, a two-war player, and you were hoping for him to take a jump. I mean, if he was that type of player, then he, on a good team, eventually becomes a, you know, fourth outfielder and can be a contributor, but he's not going to be that guy like we're talking about that's going to be that star. I mean, if we're talking about like before the season and people are talking about like different projections and stuff, for the Pirates offense to be, you know, where most people wanted it to be, you know, Brian Reynolds was going to have to revert at least somewhat back to the player he was in 2021 when he was an all-star and almost a six war player. You know, Cabrian Hayes was going to have to be for almost the entire season the out and unworldly player that he was, you know, for the last 2 months. And actually mostly it was August of last year, or the 2020 season when he came up. Henry Davis was going to have to, you know, not only be like an you know, a league average defensive catcher, but was also going to have to hit, and he still could hit, just like we talked about last week. You were looking for the best from, you know, O'Neill Cruz, Jared Triolo. When we talked about, you know, the needs of this team, when, you know, the signings hadn't been made, Michael A. Taylor hadn't been signed yet, you asked me what like the list of needs of this team were, you know, outside of starting pitching, because you can never have too much starting pitching. There's been a lot of players so far that have performed above what we thought they would. But I basically said, number one, I would go get a second baseman. Number two, I would go get a catcher. And number three, you know, if you want to, you could go get an outfielder.
Because you got a catcher. Hold on a second. You got a catcher. Yasmani Grandal, who's probably never going to see the field.
He might see the field, man. And they
you made fun of me. You made fun of me for calling him an injury-prone catcher that you were barely going to see this year. And I want to know who doesn't believe me at this point, because that was the biggest problem with this team. You had Endy, then he gets hurt. Davis isn't ready, and you had all kinds of catchers you could have kicked the tires on, and you went with a guy who's super unreliable over the last couple of years. That's why the White Sox didn't want him anymore. That's what you chose to put in the catcher position.
And a defensive liability.
Right. That is quite the roll of the dice, and it is not working out for you, Ben Cherington.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's kind of like, you know, where we're at is like Jared Triolo is not performing as well as he did at the end of last season. Defensively, he's been awesome. I mean, he's like top five, you know, defensive second baseman in the game right now, according to most of the defensive metrics. But when your OPS plus is sitting down around, I think, like the 60, I might be being a little bit favorable on his side
61,
there.
It might be. 61. He's got an OPS plus. His OPS is 556. He's slugging 265. His on-base percentage is 291. And his batting average is 214.
Yeah, at that point, you're a defensive replacement on a team. You're not the starting second baseman.
Well, he's hitting better than Rowdy. I mean, yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, there's all kinds of, like, this, it's shocking to me what the team was like for the first 2 weeks compared to what it's been since. It really is a night and day thing. It's like somebody, I mean, I didn't believe in Michael A. Taylor's initial stats. They were unworld. They didn't match up with anything he'd ever done before. He was hitting way out over his skis, but now he's regressed well below what he normally is. Like, somewhere along the line, you got to see it even out. And they're going through a rough patch right now, for sure.
They definitely are, Chris. And I mean, like I said, it all points back to like the same narratives that come out. The stuff with, you know, John Nunnally. I mean, John Nunnally has helped Ke'Bryan Hayes throughout his career. We've talked about it a million times. He was down at, you know, the alternate site in Altoona. Ke'Bryan Hayes comes up and tears it up. He, you know, works with Ke'Bryan Hayes last year when his back was injured for the entire, you know, month of July. And Ke'Bryan Hayes comes and, you know, he hits the absolute cover off the ball. Well, two things for me here right now is people forget certain things just because they want it to fit their narrative. And I do believe that John Nunnally in some ways is very beneficial to Ke'Bryan Hayes. But people forget the articles they wrote back in June of last year when Ke'Bryan Hayes' OPS for the year for that month was 855, the second highest OPS above September and October, you know, when John Nunnally was still helping Ke'Bryan Hayes. And it was due to something that Andy Haynes put into place, his toe tap, to help him time the ball better, to pull the ball more, which he did during that period of time. So, and guess who Ke'Bryan Hayes worked with this entire offseason? It was in an article with The Athletic. Guess who he's probably still texting, because he has no repercussions that can go against him anymore because he's not an employee of the team anymore? John Nunnally. And it's still not working to the degree that you want it to work. It's because Ke'Bryan Hayes is a very streaky hitter. He does have the power potential. He always hits the ball hard. He can make these changes in small doses where he can pull the ball, put the ball in the air. And it happens for like a month. And a month in baseball terms is like a minute. Do you know what I mean, man? In like a work week. It's like no time whatsoever. Any ball player can put it together for a month. But then you see Ke'Bryan Hayes revert back to the exact same swing that I've been talking about since he came up, where it's an inside-outside swing. He doesn't get the barrel around. He does hit the ball hard. He hits it to the right side of the field. And he's a good ball player, but everybody's expecting him to have the 956 OPS that he had in August of last year, instead of basically saying that Ke'Bryan Hayes is going to be a little bit of above a league average hitter, and that's Andy Haynes' fault. Is Andy Haynes helping him in any way? I don't really think so. But is Andy Haynes hurting Ke'Bryan Hayes? I also don't think so, because Ke'Bryan Hayes is one of the best hitters on this team at this point in time during the season. It's pretty much goes him, Brian Reynolds, Connor Joe, Joey Bart, Alika Williams, and
I know a bunch of guys that like get listed as like as generally bench roles who haven't had as many games as a lot of the guys who are the starters per se, mm-hmm. who are actually hitting better. And Joey Bart, again, like I brought this up last week, give this guy as many at bats as you can, and he's showing it, man. His OPS is just under 1,000. Okay, he's hitting, he's playing, he's 27. He was somebody that was believed in earlier in his career that he could be something. You may have gotten lucky on that. Find out what you've got with it for sure. And you know what's crazy to me, and not to detract on what you're doing, what's crazy to me is that the team is struggling so much with pitchers coming along and putting up performances just overall. I know not everybody's perfect when they go out there, but I mean, Jared Jones's whip is still under 1. Bailey Falter's whip is still under 1. Quinn Priester is putting on 1.16 per inning. Okay. Martin Perez is sitting right at what a fifth starter would normally be. Those other three guys are all, you know, mid to upper, definitely upper tier starting pitchers. Your worst starting pitcher right now is Mitch Keller. Before Marco Gonzalez went down, he was keeping guys off base. You have a lot of talent there. The biggest shocks to the system is that Mitch is not doing things the way that you expected him to. That can be frustrating. And you wasted $10 million on Aroldis Chapman.
I knew you were going to bring it up at some point.
No, I'm never going to stop bringing it up.
Yeah.
Okay. You gave $10 million, which in Pirates money is $50 million. Okay. Like, well, that's exaggerating. It'd be the equivalent of the Yankees spending 30, because your payroll is at least a third of theirs. So multiply Aroldis Chapman by 3. That's really what you used. If you were the Yankees or the Dodgers, $30 million on a pitcher who can't pitch. Why would you ever give money? Why would you ever devote that much of the financial pie to a non-closer, because he's not your plan at closer? Bednar was. I don't know if he is anymore the way he's pitching, but Bednar was. Okay? And you give it to a guy like Aroldis Chapman with all the other needs that you had on this team. Imagine if you had that extra bat that we were begging for throughout the entire offseason. What a difference it could have made. What that $10 million could have bought you in terms of a bat. There's a lot of bats out there. I just saw Tommy Pham start playing for the White Sox the other day, a team that has the historic worst record to ever start baseball off through the first like 25 games or something like that. I think they were 3-22 when he arrived, or 3-25 when he arrived on the scene. They won all three games with them, and you like powered the offense because he's a professional hitter. And the first comments coming out of the South Side of Chicago were he just goes to work, he's in the cages, he's very intense, and he plays for money. He took money over the chance to win, turning down the Padres because the most amount of money offered to him was the Chicago White Sox. And guess what? He was affordable, and you could have used much less than $10 million this year to bring him in and put him in your outfield, bat up towards the top of your lineup like he did over the weekend, where he powered 3 wins for a team that can't get anything and comes in with an attitude of, I need to perform because that's how I get my contract next year. And he was readily available to the Pittsburgh Pirates. And he was a gun for hire who didn't care about your chances of winning or losing, according to his interview. He just wanted the most amount of money. So don't miss me with the whole idea of nobody wants to play in Pittsburgh, and a guy like him might not have been available, and miss me with the idea that you couldn't have afforded him because he cost less than $10 million, considerably less than $10 million. I think it was like $2 or $3 million. And you'd rather have him out there right now than Jack Sawinski. And it would be helping your team right now in the middle of what you're going through. So I'm sorry, it's a misallocation of funds. You will never be able to convince me that signing Aroldis Chapman for $10 million at this point in your build with the needs that you had was a prudent decision. I blasted it then, and I will blast it all season until he is either traded away for a bag of balls or released from this team later on in the year when he never puts it together.
That's a crazy thing to me is, like, I mean, I know he had a pretty decent year last year, but he got like over 3 times the amount than he got. Like, it's just... I'm sitting here listening to you, Chris, and that's where it's just thinking to me. I'm just like, spent $10 million on a reliever
that you didn't need. Like, here's the thing. Relief pitchers are a dime a dozen. They are everywhere. And when you find one that you think is going to work out and he works out for 2 months and he falls apart, you get rid of him and you bring in another one. You've had years to develop the system. You're telling me you don't have somebody down in AAA that can come up and get you a couple of innings and just rotate in the hot hand for a couple of months? and use the $10 million at something that you can't just do that with? Like, a relief pitcher is the most easily replaceable member of your team. It is a cast-off of starting rotations. You relief pitchers constantly have good months and bad months and good years and bad years, and they are wholly unpredictable. I mean, look at Craig Kimbrell, the guy with the crazy thing where he sticks his arms out, and he's been on so many teams around baseball. And what happens with Craig Kimbrell? He does really well for like half a year on a team. He gets traded to somebody else, and then he falls apart because he can't even maintain it for like six straight months. He has one good year. He has one bad year. He's up and he's down. And a lot of people think he's a Hall of Famer because that's how volatile relief pitchers are. $10 million for a relief pitcher. That's stupid.
And it's just getting, like I said, more frustrating now when you bring up like how well that the starting pitching has been performing. I mean, it's just like, and everybody's saying it and everybody knows it, but it's wasting like such good starts because you're getting, you know, probably the best that you will ever see of Bailey Falter. Jared Jones, you know, coming out and performing not like a rookie. I mean, did have a little bit of a rough start the last time he was out. But if his rough start is giving up, you know, three runs in five innings, my dear God, like, I take that like, you know, 7 days a week and, you know, twice on Sundays. But yeah, I mean, it's just how bad the offense has been. And I mean,
look at how you're wasting the idea that Quinn Priester got here, right? Like, there's one of the guys that I kept saying, wait till he gets here. Okay. We're going to see like a boost when guys get here. All right. He's had two starts. He's got a 1.161 whip. He's got an ERA of 3.48 over two appearances and 10.1 innings. If you would have told me that before he came up, after what I saw the first time he was there in the majors, I would have said, where do I sign up?
Can't disagree, man. Can't disagree whatsoever. And the big thing here is that, I mean, the entire offseason we spent talking about starting pitching. And like I said before, yeah, I would want, you know, that starting pitching. But, I mean, the offense, like, it was kind of like if everything hits perfectly. And I know that the offense should be performing better than it was. But man, our expectations were like almost everybody meeting to exceeding expectations, as opposed to, you know, some guys that couldn't hit very well, you know, and here's the other part is, as we're recording this, it's not even May yet. So, I mean, a lot of this stuff can completely turn around because we know that baseball types of stuff is streaky. I mean, even the best hitters, you know, will go through slumps. And everybody's going through kind of a slump to a degree at this point in time. But yeah, I mean, it's not like we co-signed. I didn't co-sign on the Michael A. Taylor. I said it improved your defense, but at this point in time, it kind of really even hasn't. I don't think anybody co-signed on the Rowdy Tellez. Nobody co-signed on Yasmani Grandal.
Oh,
so
no.
All of these signings that were made, and with Aroldis Chapman, it was just like, that's the thing that drives me nuts, Chris, is everybody was saying, you know, on paper, we're a top three bullpen. But every single year, everybody has said, oh man, the bullpen looks so good before the season. And then not even a month into the season, they're like, man, what's wrong with our bullpen?
Right, because they're so volatile. It's like bullpen pieces.
It's like you either base it on what they had done for the past 3 years, or you base it on potential of what they could be. You didn't base it on any sort of fact whatsoever. It's like, well, if we get first half Aroldis Chapman, and if we get what David Bednar for the entire season usually does for about half of the season, and, you know, if Carmen Majinski comes back and he does what he did, you know, in 8 out of his 15 appearances last year, then we'll have the best bullpen in baseball. Like,
Why would you ever spend money on a bullpen, Craig? I mean, think about it. You're running a team with Bob Nutting as your owner, and he throws around nickels like they're manhole covers. He never spends any money. You're going to be at the bottom of payroll, and you've got to find a way to make things work. You got a couple of guys on your roster who are fairly good players, above average, in Hayes and Reynolds. You got a bunch of no-names. You got a bunch of guys that are prospects you hope will work out, but you know that the law of averages says some will work out, some will not, and you need to be lucky. You need fortune to shine upon you for one of them to become one of those it guys, right? You went out, you grabbed a couple of hired guns to try to fill in around there. You didn't really think very smartly when you looked at Grandal with all the injury history. You got so many other variables. Why would you add that variable into your team? Well, if the wind blows right and he doesn't hurt his knee, I mean, what a waste that is, okay? And you added too many variables into your lineup. You've got everything starting to come to fruition with the rotation and the idea that you've got young stars on the way. And you've got money to spend. You know what you do? Hopefully, over the last couple of years, you've been developing arms. You've been finding guys that are just really good at getting three outs. That may not be starters, but they've been down in your system, and they're really good at doing a specific thing. And you build your bullpen that way because you can't afford to spend the money to go out and buy bullpen arms. Forget Aroldis Chapman. I wouldn't give $10 million to any relief pitcher in baseball if I were the Pirates, because the $10 million is needed in harder-to-fill roles. I was mad about it when it happened, but when things aren't going well and he's not pitching well, it's really easy to get mad about it, because it never made sense. It was like buying a fancy hood ornament that belongs on a Ferrari and putting it on top of your Chevy Caprice.
That's a great analogy.
That's what it is. I mean, look at this fancy hood ornament I got. And then you put it on this thing. You put it on something unfinished. You put it on something that's not a Ferrari because you don't have a Ferrari yet. So when you don't have a Ferrari, you don't go out and buy the hood ornament. And that's all he is. He was a hood ornament at $10 million. And at a volatile position, which is relief pitcher.
And Pirates fans have gotten so desperate, Chris, that they're just like, well, no, Rowdy's not hitting, so Jake Lamb will, because the last time he hit was six years ago.
Jake Lamb's still playing baseball? Please.
Hey, man.
Aaron, I thought he retired. Jake Lamb, man. It's bad when you're looking at Jake Lamb because you can't afford anything else.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say.